Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Fighting the Void. And it is time once again to kind of let the hair down a little bit, kick back, put your feet up, and we're just going to talk about something that hopefully isn't going to drive you crazy. Although, what we're going to talk about has been known to drive a few people crazy. So I guess it depends on where you land. So yeah. What we're talking about today is the Snyder Cut. It is finally here. It's actually been here for about a week and a half now. And for those who don't know, it's basically what the original director of the Justice League wanted to put out in the theaters for us before it got put in the hands of Joss Whedon and turned into the abomination that we all saw before. So, but I'm not going to go too much into the history of that because I have with me today Mr. Eric Blake, who is one of the people who is instrumental in making the Snyder Cut actually happen and leading the charge in letting Warner Brothers know that, hey, you've got a lot of fans out here that actually want to see Zack's version of the Justice League. And frankly, you guys are stupid because you're leaving a ton of money on the table. So, yeah. Eric, before we get into the Snyder Cut itself, this 4-hour gargantuan of a movie, let's take us through like a quick couple minute synopsis of why the Snyder Cut is a thing and that whole multi-year process of making it a thing.
Oh, okay. How to distill it into a couple of minutes, geez.
Best you can.
Okay. Well, let's see. November 17th, 2017. Remember the 17th of November. Reshoots, re-edits, and plot. I know of no reason the executive's treason should ever be got. That's how I can sum that up. Yeah. All right. Basically, okay. And one thing that I can best say, like to really sum all this up is, if you go way back to, of all things, the original Star Wars trilogy, any Star Wars fan will look back and say, and it's pretty much, and it's the widespread view is, The Empire Strikes Back is quite possibly the greatest film in the entire franchise. Hmm. But this is something interesting. When Empire Strikes Back first came out, people didn't like it. The audience was like, what the heck is this? I mean, it's so dark, you know, all the heroes lose at the end.
Sir, I was part of the original audience.
Yeah.
It's actually the first movie I clearly remember seeing in theaters, as it turns out. Yeah. I loved it. So
yeah, you loved it.
These people are stupid. Anyway, yes. Moving on.
By the way, that's going to parallel with me. But anyway, if you can pretty much figure out where I'm going with this.
Okay.
A lot of people, let's say, they saw the original movie. Then they saw Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. And they're like, it's so dark. The heroes have lost. What the heck is going on here? And they didn't know what to make of this. But the studio, you know, like Fox, said, okay, we'll carry this through to the end. And George Lucas, you know, and you know, the director and the screenwriter, Lawrence Kasdan, they gave us Return of the Jedi. And then those people that hated on Empire Strikes Back, they looked at Return of the Jedi and they're like, oh, that's what Empire was building up to. And they realized what it was all building up to. They could then look back at Empire Strikes Back and realize and look at it and realize how good it was. Now, the fact that everyone was willing to wait until the third one came out and everything and this darkness of Empire Strikes Back was paid off, we really look back at that and it's like, it's really, I can't help wondering, could that have happened the way that it did if social media had been a thing back then? If there had been this dissatisfaction with Empire Strikes Back, a little bit would have led to like this online trashing of the film, And then of course the studio of course would have said, okay, maybe we should change things. We should like change things completely instead of just carrying the vision through to the end. Well, there was social media when Batman v Superman came out. And Batman v Superman already had the issue of being cut down by the studio because they're saying, oh, it was too long. You know, 3 hours is too long. Never mind, each of the Lord of the Rings films had a 3 hour long theatrical cut, but let's not talk about that. Never mind, this is a superhero film. This is supposed to be epic. So they cut it down and, you know, people didn't like it. And then, of course, the extended cut, the ultimate edition came out, and a lot of the critics that did not like the theatrical cut said, hey, wait a minute, this is actually pretty good. But by then the issue was too, by then it was too late. The studio was like, hey, we need to go a different direction. So they were pushing Zack Snyder to go a different direction. Now Zack was, was holding the line. And there were some things where he would actually shoot two different versions of a lot of the scenes. Okay. Like by then, like they had brought on Geoff Johns to be like the new head of the DCU and basically like be the one in charge. And basically like Zack would have to answer to Geoff Johns.
Right.
And apparently so Geoff Johns was like telling him do this and this and this. So Zack would actually apparently like shoot. He would shoot a version of the scene that Johns and his group were demanding. And then he would shoot his version. So, and I guess the idea may have been that he would have released, maybe the theatrical release would have been the version that they were demanding, and then he would release his director's cut, which had been the version he got. But even then, long story short, you know, like Zack's daughter committed suicide. Zack was deep in production, but he was like, okay, I need to focus on my family. Now, besides, I'm deep in production. What's the worst they could do? So he left.
Oh, dang it. Eric froze up.
Down to 2 hours.
Oh, there we go.
Cut the movie down to 2 hours. Reshoot what you need to reshoot. And by the way, make it fun. Fun, 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 fun. Because the superhero movie must be fun. And he did. And we got Justice League, what we call Justice League in 2017. And we were all sitting down in the theater and wondering, what are we supposed to make of this? And shortly after, the community was formed, especially particularly on Twitter, then on Vero and so on, and on YouTube, for hashtag release the Snyder Cut. And bit by bit, it grew and grew and grew. Over the course of 2018, like in mid-2018 was when I really started getting involved in it. And then 2019, Zach released this shirt. This little shirt, this beautiful shirt right here. Like, remember, like the first time you had me on, I was talking about what this shirt meant.
Right. Yep.
Basically his dramatic outline for like what his vision was for his entire 5-part arc. You know, Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Justice League 1, Justice League 2, Justice League 3. And he didn't tell us what it was all about. Says, okay, here's a mystery. Let's see if you can figure it out. And this is where I first got my first 15 minutes was like figuring out what the heck the coffin, the bat symbol, and the baby was all about.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And but that was in early 2019. And then mid-2019, that was when I brought some people together to do a Project Comic-Con you went to San Diego Comic-Con, but in the meantime, I was overseeing like a crowdfunder for where we do some like big things where we flew like an airborne banner over Comic-Con for like 2 hours straight. We funded a digital billboard that would be like different colors day and night, but it would show like Snyder Cut. We funded an advertisement for the issue of Hollywood Reporter that was released, you know, that weekend, the weekend of Comic-Con. And then we funded a bus stop ad space where we're basically like the bus stop, like the ad company like had made a mistake where they had at first like had thought they were able to like give us an ad on every single like one of this series of bus stops, but then they realized they couldn't. So they said, okay, what we can give you is all of the bus stop, all the ad space on one bus stop. And we picked one. And we picked one. And we were purely deciding on, okay, it needs to be close enough to Comic-Con, but it needs to be downtown so everyone can see it. And it was just by pure stroke of luck, the one that we picked happened to be across the street from the San Diego Hall of Justice. What is that about? Yeah.
Awesome.
To quote Kill Bill, when fortune smiles on something as this, it becomes proof like no other that not only does God exist, but you're doing his will. Dave's full. Yeah. So like we did that, and you know, others like we did some focus on boots on the ground, and that actually got a lot of publicity for the movement. And then finally, it on November 17th, 2 years after Justice League came out, there was a great big hashtag trend event that we did on Twitter. And Zach himself was involved, Ben Affleck was involved, Gal Gadot, Jason Momoa, they were all involved in like tweeting out this hashtag, and it was like a big boom, like a near record. And then some things happened. Some very interesting things happened. And of course, now around this time, Sonic came out, and you know, Sonic, you know, famously, like they listened to the fans. When the first trailer came out, people did not like how Sonic looked, so they revised it so he looked more true to to the Sonic we all knew and love. And then just like that, you know, Sonic became like a big success. It would have been like a mild success before, but it became a big success after that, and it sent a message: listen to the fans. That will get listening to the fans will get you money.
And just like that, Eric is out. Sounds, I think he accidentally knocked his phone off there. But we'll go ahead, and I'm sure he'll get back here very quickly. Oh, look, here he is. Hold on just a minute. Yeah. Hey, stop knocking your phone around.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it secure. It slipped down, and then I brought it up and pushed the wrong button. Anyway, so Sonic happened, and in the meantime, like that trend event had happened. And we didn't know what was going on. All we know is that someone from Zach was telling us to do this trend event. So he put all that together, and we weren't sure what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the course of the first third of 2020, Zach was like giving us a special. Like he was hosting an art event. Give you some fan art, and the best fan art will get something very interesting. He was showing us some storyboard. He was showing us the storyboard that revealed that General Swanwick was Martian Manhunter all along, all that good stuff. And we were wondering, okay, what is going? Something's happening. And of course, in the meantime, of course, like the new head of the new CEO of Warner Brothers, Ann Sarnoff was saying, hey, maybe we should do a streaming service. And then there's the new guy, then Jason Kilar, who was the former he was the founder and former head of Hulu, was brought in to be like the head of a Warner Media, which is actually a higher echelon in the AT&T threshold, like the AT&T
right. level. AT&T, Warner, yeah.
Yeah, Warner yeah, Media, and then Warner Brothers. But then Warner Media is, it kind of oversees Warner Brothers, although Warner Brothers is almost.
Point being, they got some new people in there that helped. Yeah, they were interested in maybe trying something.
New stuff. And then, although HBO Max is actually directly under Warner Media, so it's actually strictly under under Kilar. So we were wondering, okay, something is happening. And then Zack Snyder did a on Vero director's commentary of Batman v Superman.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then he announced he was going to do another director's commentary of Man of Steel. And then suddenly he moved it back a couple of months earlier than normal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, something's happening. And then we sat down, we watched it. And then after he was finished with the commentary, he brought on Henry Cavill And he brought on a whole bunch of fans because, like, it was, this was very interesting because, like, beforehand, he said, like, certain fans are going to be coming on to talk with me afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where they're all wondering, okay, like, you're showing us these your commentaries on Man of Steel, Batman, Superman. Are you going to, is going to have something more? And then Zack Snyder's like, well, I don't know. It's not really up to me. And then Henry Cavill's like, I think you should show it. You know, maybe I should. And he showed the poster that the Snyder Cut is coming out in 2021 on HBO Max. And we won. With that, we won. And then, so with all that said and done, we were all getting ready. And then, of course, over the course of the year, HBO Max, like, they've been trying to, like, get HBO Max connections to, you know, the entire world so that everyone in the world could see it. And now here we are.
And here we are. And I said, it's been out for about a week and a half at this point. And it took me 3 days to watch it because it's 4 hours. And, well, I have a life. It's hard to get 4 hours straight to sit and watch anything.
I will say, like, when they announced, like, you know, that the release date was going to be March 18th. Okay. So I'm actually working at Walmart right now. I'm one of the clean teams, actually one of the clean team. So one thing I did was that I put in a formal request to have the 18th as one of my days off for the week.
Right.
And they did. They granted it.
Amen. Hallelujah.
So, absolutely. And I knew, okay, here's my plan. The moment it shows up on HBO Max, and that was like 3 a.m. over in Eastern Standard Time. 3 a.m, that's when I'm going to see the whole thing, and then I'm going to sleep.
There you go.
So I saw it. I slept, and then when I woke up, I says, okay, and I need to process what I saw.
There you go. And by a life, people, I mean I have kids and a job and side projects, so calm down. It's okay. Yeah, if you got a chance to watch all four of it, honestly, more power to you. I'm happy for you.
Although, I feel like Zack Snyder, like, he knew that this was going to be an issue, especially like when you're sitting down at the home and seeing it. So he had chapter one, like a black screen, rather like a Quentin Tarantino movie, chapter one, chapter two, chapter three. Mm-hmm. So, like, at those points, like, he says, hey, you know, at those points, you can stop and pause. It's almost like you're watching a miniseries.
Yeah. And that was a clever way to organize it. And I'm sure it was also put in there, one, to accommodate people at home. And I remember early on there was talk, like, is this going to be actually released in an episodic format? Which, you know, it could easily still be cut up into that if they so desired to do so. But I don't they see any point to doing that at this point.
Yeah.
But then again, I didn't see any point to releasing a black and white version, but they did that for some reason.
I know. And I saw it and I was like, okay.
I guess.
I mean, apparently it was purely a fan service thing. And it had to do with the fact that they were, like, even way back when Zach was still on post-production, they were demanding that he was making it, they make it more colorful. And, you know, the weird colors that we saw in Justice League was pretty much what they were trying to impose on him during post-production.
Yeah.
So in this long interim where he had the Snyder Cut with him, he didn't have the special effects completely finished, but he had it in black and white at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, partly because the special effects were not fully finished and that you're able to get away with that best if you don't have all the colors. And he didn't have the resources at the time to, like, readjust the colors. So they went back to how he wanted.
I'm not going to lie. I cheered a little bit inside when during the movie, that stupid dome went down.
Yeah.
I was like, ah, good. We're not going to get the Justice League color scheme.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. I was like, oh, good.
Purple.
We're done with that. It made me really happy. But now let's actually talk about, you know, the film itself. I'm going to take a minute and give my quick take on it, and then I'll let you have the floor again. My short version is I thought the theatrical release Justice League was all right. Yeah. Like it was like okay, it was a movie. I didn't hate it, but I definitely don't love it. The Snyder cut. The first hour and a half, hour 40 minutes actually, I watched. I was like, okay, I'm concerned. Because that was the hour and a half that it was really, really heavy on all the slow-mo. Yeah. It was like every couple of minutes we were getting another slow-mo sequence, and it was just way, way, way too much. Like, way too much. Yeah. It was like, wow. Like, John Woo right now would be going, okay, dude, chill. Put the slow-mo cam down and speed that sucker up. Can you get a little shaky cam in here? Something like that. But the next day I watched another hour and a half and it started to pick up and it's like, okay, all right. It's getting better as we go along here. Okay. And by the time it was done, I was like, all right. At the end of the day, I enjoyed it. I think it was definitely a lot better than Justice League.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I would actually love to still see a sequel where they actually throw down with Darkseid. And for a minute there, I thought we were going to get it. I thought we were going to get a Darkseid throwdown. I was like, oh, it's like he said, all he has to do is step through the portal.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. Tony Todd, get in there. But no, we didn't get that, which bummed me out a little bit because that would have been an actual challenge for Superman because that was a bit of a downside in that it was so easy once Superman showed up to just completely destroy Steppenwolf.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I mean, Steppenwolf throws this axe, which for some reason, if he hits the ground with it, it makes weird designs appear. But I don't get that. But, it, you know, he just looked at it and goes, cool story, bro. I would have liked to see it be more of a challenge. But then again, I understand it's also Steppenwolf. He's the underling. Mm-hmm. As opposed to Darkseid, who is the big bad. So, okay, fine. I get that. Now, various critiques that I did have, other than the obvious slow-mo, the Wonder Woman theme song every time she appears on screen got a little annoying. Yeah. I love her theme music.
Yeah, the version of it where, like, you hear, like, the lady singing it instead of the typical...
It's like, okay, we need to calm down a little bit with that. Just a little. Maybe like for the most dramatic times when she's on screen, not like every time. But
yeah.
Moving on from that. I still don't like the Ezra Miller version of the Flash. Mm-hmm. I just don't like him. Barry Allen is not Peter Parker. Stop it. If this was Wally West Flash, that would have been more palatable to me.
Yeah, no, funny thing.
Or if it was Bart Allen, if it was Impulse, again, more palatable. Yeah. But it's not. It's supposed to be Barry Allen, and this is not Barry Allen.
Yeah.
This is Peter Parker, and for some reason people are calling him Barry Allen.
Yeah.
It's kind of like if you watch the John Carter movie back in the day, it's like the movie's not terrible, but who's this Jack Wagon they keep calling John Carter? Because that's not John Carter. But anyway, and right now I'm mostly just giving the negative elements. I didn't see any point to the Martian Manhunter appearances in the film because he was utterly inconsequential. Yeah. It's like, oh, look, there's Martian Manhunter, who for some reason is revealing his identity right outside Lois Lane's apartment. Hope she doesn't open the door because, because she thinks Martha forgot her purse. You know, that would just be awkward. Or, you know, a neighbor walks out like, what the? It's just awkward. And then, of course, you know, he shows up and I can't remember who put it. I think it was Jeremy Johns who put it this way. I was like, and I just wanted to let you know that I'm around for any sequels you might be making. I was like, what was the point of that? Other than just to say, this guy's here. Okay. I was actually looking forward to seeing Martian Manhunter in the film. I really wanted him to be part of the fight. Because, you know, one of the things in the original marketing campaign was the Unite the Seven. I was like, well, he's the seventh. I was really hoping we were going to see that, but no such luck. And then, of course, I thought the sequence with, you know, the redone ancient invasion sequence with, you know, Darkseid there instead of Steppenwolf. I thought Darkseid went down way too easy. I was like, and Ares burying the axe in his shoulder. I was just like, you know, I look over to my kid. I was like, should have aimed for the head, huh? did you really have to make that parallel? Because people are already making them anyway. And I know better than a lot of people that Thanos is the knockoff. But because he was on screen first, people are obviously going to think the other thing. But anyway, you know, I thought Darkseid went down way too easy in that. And also, how did he forget where what the name of the planet where it was?
That's a common thing. That's a common question people.
Yeah, like why? I'm sure there's a reason, and maybe we would get it in a sequel. I would love to have had that reason, or like not even, you know, why didn't Darkseid immediately come back and be like, "All right, I got a bigger fleet and time to whoop up on some uppity humans."
Yeah. And I have the Omega Beam now.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, he had the Omega Beam then.
Actually,
they showed it in flashback sequences.
Yeah, well, they showed it in when Victor was having his visions of the future, like when he uses it to.
You're right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Because at that point in the point in that backstory that Diana is talking about, he was like, if you notice, he doesn't have his full traditional Darkseid armor on. He's got his shirt off, basically. It's because at that point, he's not the ruler of Apocalypse. He's not the Emperor Darkseid. He's Uxas. He's the son of the Emperor at the time.
Okay.
He's trying to get his name out, get a name for himself. And he doesn't have his super weapon up on his head, like his helmet with the Omega Beam on it.
And I did honestly figure, it's like, okay, I can accept that he went down easy. Okay, it was a long time ago. He's gotten bigger and better since then.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm okay with it. I still would have liked to see more, but okay.
Yeah. Oddly enough, I am kind of with you that I wish it was explained a bit more. It was emphasized a bit more. Because, you know, one of the few things, like when looking at Batman v Superman, that I wish had been in it, but Zach had filmed it, but he had cut. There was a scene where Clark is like at his and Lois's apartment. He's at the table looking at the laptop, and he's like, found something. And the implication is, and the idea is that it's generally accepted that what he was looking at was he was researching Bruce Wayne because he had already encountered Bruce Wayne. He was suspicious of him. He looked at Bruce Wayne and he had found the story of the death of Bruce's parents.
Yeah.
And that is the reason that he says Martha in the fight, because that's like the one thing that I felt like if Zach had kept that scene, it would have spared us a lot of grief that people were giving us.
Yes.
And again, like with Justice League, with that part, Justice League, like Zach had told us, like when we were like in conversations with fans and all that, that he's already just Uxas right now. He's not fully Darkseid at the moment when he's attacking Earth, so he doesn't have his full strength and full powers. It's like,
okay, fair.
And then like, but then when I hear this, like folks like you, like who are not aware of everything that Zach had laid out to the fans, which you're pretty much not supposed to if you're going to just watch the movie.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. So I will see that, I think more of it should have been explained. I mean, Diana kind of hints at it that he was building up his forces and all that, but it wasn't emphasized enough that it stuck in people's heads. So I could see that. Now,
it is, you know, I wonder, is this a weakness of Zach as a filmmaker? Like sometimes it's in his head, but he every now and then he kind of screws up getting it out of his head and on the screen.
It is an irony because the fundamental law of storytelling is whenever possible, show, don't tell.
Right.
And Zach has kept that in his head, but maybe a case could be made that he has it in his head too much. Yes, he shows.
And every now and then you need to.
Yeah. Every now and then.
He needs to be clear.
You need to tell. Yeah, you arguably do. And he does tell a good amount, but the case could be made that he doesn't tell, may not tell enough. And those of us who have followed him know ahead of time what the answer is, but you're not necessarily, but you're not supposed to know ahead of time when.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I would agree. Yeah. Well, I think I'm getting visited here. Huh. Oh, yes, I am. Un momento, por. Go. You know what? While I deal with my visitor, how about you go ahead and give your review? I'm going to go ahead and mute my thing here.
Okay. Now, my review, well, I gave like a little like 20 minute or so no spoiler review on my channel. And it was basically my feeling with my feeling about the movie was really, I enjoyed it, but it really, how the level of enjoyment that I had really reminded me of when I first saw the original Avengers movie, the first Avengers movie. I mean, when I saw it, like, there was all that hype about it. And when I saw it, I was like, I enjoyed it. But, and it took me watching it again and again and again that I first, like, liked it more. And I liked it a little bit more and I liked it a little bit more. And when I, but the thing is here, I didn't just have marketing hype. I had the hype of 2.5 years of me and others in the Snyder Cut community putting out our proverbial blood, sweat, and tears to get this thing out. Get this thing going, get this thing released. And we finally did. And here I, and here we are, we're sitting down and we see it. And I'm like, well, I enjoyed it. Shouldn't I be enjoying this more? Shouldn't I be like loving this thing? Like, this is the greatest movie ever made. Well, oh boy. Yeah. Well, I mean, I liked it. I really enjoyed it. It's, but it was one of those cases where, and we were kind of hinting at this, there's this cliche we hear all the time, leave the audience wanting more. And all I can say is that's not always a good thing. And I did. Sometimes yeah, you wanted more.
To leave it all out on the field.
Yeah, I can barely hear you for some reason.
Oh,
I don't know.
Sorry, it's because I have my thing up here. You know, sometimes to use another cliche, it's better to leave it all out on the field.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, and it's like, but for me, it wasn't so much for me, it's like, my wanting more in this case was just, I wished even more than I had before that we had gotten this movie in 2017. Now, we wouldn't have gotten a full-on four-hour movie in the theaters, but it would have been nice if they had taken a cue from Lord of the Rings, where the theatrical cut is 3 hours, the extended cut is the 4 hours. That would have been nice. I mean, Endgame, we know how long Endgame was 3 hours.
Yeah.
And that, and honestly, I got such a kick out of the fact that Endgame was 3 hours long. And we could all just look back at Warner Brothers and like, what the heck were you thinking of? Disney was cool with a 3 hour movie.
Yeah. What's wrong with you? Well, and that's exactly right. And it, again, it's a similar type of thing. It's a similar type of audience you're going after. It's like, guys, the audience will support a 3 hour movie if it's good. And honestly, it would be easy to recut the Snyder Cut into a 3 hour movie.
Exactly.
There are a couple of scenes in there you could definitely do without.
Yes, exactly. And especially looking at the context of Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. I mean, someone asked Peter Jackson, okay, which cut is your director's cut? The theatrical cut or the extended? And he's like, both of them. And his point was, look, the theatrical cuts were edited so that the first time you watch the movie, you sit down in the theater and you watch this, you're not restless to get to the next plot point. But having already seen it, knowing where everything is going, then you can sit down and relax with a 4 hour extended cut and you can hang out with the characters more and you can explore this universe more.
Yeah.
And to me, because we didn't get good theatrical cut of Zach's film in 2017. We didn't get that super this well-paced theatrical cut, three-hour theatrical cut, where we're not restless to get to the next point. And all we got is the extended edition. So, and not only that, if that had happened, it would have been received better. I mean, the critics are en masse loving this movie. It's got like a 70-something percent on Rotten Tomatoes. And which is funny, because like I'm pretty sure this is like the highest RT score Zack Snyder has ever gotten. I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't know. I forget how high the RT score was for 300, but I'm pretty sure that might have been pretty high, but still. But still, it's been the highest he's gotten in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have gotten a good Justice League. If we'd gotten his Justice League in 2017, Justice League 2 was scheduled for 2019. And with that in mind, that means Justice League 3, at the very latest, would have come out this year, 2021. And really just watching the Snyder Cut that we got, I'm just like, I wish we'd gotten all of this by now. We should have gotten the whole everything by now. And And had we gotten this film in 2017 with the confidence that everything else was coming soon, I would have been a lot more positive. Like, oh, I love this, and I love where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's like we have waited so long. I wanted this to like blow me up, and well, I enjoyed it. I mean, to quote the great Jeremy Johns, it's worth watching and worth buying on Blu-ray. Is it awesome-tacular? I may have to process it a bit more. I don't know. But it is in my top three of the DCEU films, but it's number three. Like, I have Man of Steel number one, Batman v Superman number two, and then just there's that.
All right. Yeah, I would definitely put Man of Steel number one for Snyderverse. Yeah. And
yes.
You know, obviously, Man of Steel, I would say Wonder Woman, and then probably Snyder Cut, Justice League.
Yeah.
It's probably the way I would go with that.
Yeah.
I should point out too, there's plenty of things that I liked about it. After all, I did say I liked it.
Yeah,
Jason Momoa Aquaman does kind of grow on me, especially more in this one than in the Justice League one. He's slightly less dude bro.
Yeah.
And there's a little, I don't know, the personality does grow on me, but then again, I have a sympathy for people that are a touch rough around the edges anyway. Yep. So you're going to get different mileage on that. But also I like Batman more in this. Mm-hmm. It is very much more. And for one, Affleck had more to do as Batman in this that I liked the take. It's a different take. It is an Elseworlds take.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of very quickly. I do think viewing this as an Elseworlds story is a very good way to go, because you kind of avoid a lot of the baggage with trying to compare it with exactly what you're used to, because let's face it, these are versions of the characters that are different than what you probably remember growing up. They're definitely different than the Super Friends. They're definitely different than the Bruce Timm, Paul Dini verse animated versions. And yes, I realize that what I'm saying right now seems to contradict my critique of the Ezra Miller Flash. I just can't stand him. I'm sorry. I just really don't like this version of the Flash at all.
It's funny though that you brought up like Wally West, because the Wally West that I know and love and I grew up with is the Wally West of the Justice League cartoons. And that Wally West is nothing like Ezra Miller's Barry Allen. That Wally West is a jock. Is a jock.
Yeah, but he's also a little more lighthearted.
Yeah.
Like he is going to be more lighthearted, more prone to make a joke here and there, as opposed to as opposed to Barry Allen. Mm-hmm. So it's still more, but and that's also why I was kind of jumped to, you know, Bart Allen actually is the better, would be the better corollary. But regardless, you know, again, And quickly on this version of Batman, you know, some people, I guess, have brought up the whole, he sure kills a lot of things. Well, they're aliens. They're alien invaders. It is a different situation. And there have been more than enough stories where in those kinds of situations, yes, Batman isn't mass vigilante holding back the demons mode. He's soldier fighting a war mode. And he can go back and forth between them.
Yes, he can.
And it's been done certainly in numerous other Elseworld stories, you know, going back a very long ways. It's not, that's not terribly uncommon for him. Killing people and not giving a crap at all, whether or not the average criminals die or whatnot. Okay, fair. But then again, you got to keep in mind the version of Batman we were getting. And that's a different thing.
Yeah. Plus, the first time we talked about this, Michael Keaton did not have that one rule at all. He didn't give a crap either. He gave even less of a crap than Batfleck did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that is something people forget. And again, you know, Christopher Reeve's Superman and Superman 2 had no problems with when Lois Lane shoved Fiora, or no, was it Fiora or the other, the dumb one? Which one did she shove down the crevasse?
She punched down Fiora, but Clark himself punched Zod down the crevice.
Right.
And he didn't care.
No, not even a tiny bit. It's like let's remember this a little bit, guys. But anyway, I mean, of course, to echo what a lot of other people have said, I was really happy to see what they do with Ray Fisher and Cyborg overall. Yes. I would probably cut a couple of his scenes here and there to get it down to 3 hours.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't completely butcher it the way Joss Whedon did. Yeah. You know, I honestly see why Ray Fisher was pissed at him. I get it. I completely understand why Ray Fisher was angry with Joss Whedon. I think if he had made the two or three minor cuts that I would make to get it down to 3 hours, I'm pretty sure Fisher would be like, that's movies.
Yeah. And the extended cut would have had those scenes. So there you go.
Right, exactly. You know, whereas Joss Whedon was just like, and where's the nearest machete so I could just destroy this character?
Yeah. And as for Flash, well, let's make him even more goofy and let's have him fall into Diana's.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, really? Really? Yeah. Joss Whedon, you just wanted to film that scene.
Yeah.
Yes, especially what's come out about this guy in the years since.
Oh yes, and all the close-ups of her behind too. Seriously. And as for Lois, like Lois had, and of course, anyone who knows me, you probably know this by now that
you may be a fan.
Yes, of Amy quite Adam. Possibly my favorite actress of all time. But and the thing is, it was very interesting to me. Like the first time I saw it, is that she barely talks. She doesn't talk that much. Yeah. She has a lot of scenes. But she hasn't talked that much. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting because a case could be made that she talks more in Justice League, but her scenes in Justice League basically humiliate her, like the whole thirsty joke that Martha gives in that version. And just if you remember that version, the look on Amy Adams' face.
Oh, gosh, I honestly don't remember, but
the look on her face when you hear the thirsty joke and she just cringes. Now she's trying her best. She's pretty much doing it in character. Like Lois would cringe at it too, but you can't help thinking this is Amy going through, what the heck is this?
Her going, I'm not really acting right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then when she's trying to laugh afterwards, she goes like this. It's like, oh, I'm getting choked by this garbage. Yeah.
You know, I will say too, it was, one of the things I really liked about this actually was the way Superman's rampage stops.
Yes.
Yeah. Right after they resurrect him. And that whole scene was just better in general. Yes. The way Justice League kind of recut it, it was way too Super Friends.
Yeah.
Way too. It's like, well, you know, it's gotta be right at the exact second that that the mother box touches the goo, and then we need the electricity, and poof, magical happen. Yeah. It was more like, it's like, no, we need to be able to wake this thing up.
Yeah.
And we don't have the juice to do it. The only way we can do it is with Flash. It wasn't like mm-hmm. it has to be the exact right combination of circumstances. It was way too Super Friends. And but anyway, instead of this being something where Batman was just really, really, really hoping that if he saw Lois and Martha that he would snap out of it and then unleashes the big guns. It was, you know, having Lois go, oh, my gosh, my man's back and he's destroying everything. This is not good. And Lois Lane does what Lois Lane would do. She runs down right into the thick of it and tries to get through to him. And I think that was a better version of that.
Yes. And in fact, like, there's a nice parallel because in Batman v Superman, who ends the fight? Lois ends the fight and saves Clark from getting killed by Bruce.
Mm-hmm. And in this movie, exactly. Yes.
She stops the fight and saves Bruce from getting killed by Clark.
Yep.
It's a nice little thing. Like, in a way, like we're talking about Unite the Seven, in a way, yes, Martian Manhunter is there, but the one who's really saving the day is Lois. She saves the entire league from angry Superman. Yep. So there you go. And by the way, speaking of Lois, did you notice a little something? Like the scene where she
pregnancy test?
Yes. Now here's the thing. We were all wondering, because like remember the baby.
Yep.
When we saw that, all saw that pregnancy test, we're like, how long after Batman v Superman is Justice League? But then someone asked Zach, and he said, basically a month. And we were like, whew. Because you know what that would imply. Yeah. Because if it was a year, that might be an issue. But because like there was speculation, because like apparently way back, Zach and Jim Lee, when they were hammering together, they were throwing around ideas for what to do with this arc. Mm-hmm. They were bouncing around the idea of when Clark was dead, like in between, like Bruce was trying to was reaching out to Lois and comforting her and all that. Mm-hmm. And then he, at the very least, he developed feelings for Lois and maybe they hooked up, but they would have to be a long period of time. And then but the thing is, and a lot of people were latching onto that. It's like, oh my gosh, maybe Bruce is the father. And it's like, well, no. It's like they threw that idea out pretty soon after thinking of it.
Yep.
I mean, like, yes, they wrote down what the outline would have been with that in mind, but then they put it aside. Right. Now, it's only set a month after Clark's death. Lois is completely crushed. She is in no condition to really interact with anyone aside from Martha Kent and the cop.
That's obviously a super baby.
Yes, it's obviously a super baby. And at the very least, and even though, like, it's still a little ambiguous as to whether or not she actually is pregnant or if she's just wondering if maybe she is. But what we do know is this. By the end of the movie, she is pregnant. When she and Martha are, like, where Clark and Bruce are, like, watching them and they're getting into the house, she's carrying a baby basket. Yep. She's carrying a baby basket. Yeah. And then, of course, And then Bruce says to Clark, by the way, I believe congratulations are in order. Yep.
Well, I figured that I just assumed that was the marriage because he.
Yeah, we all.
Our
we
comment all were, with seeing the ring and.
Yeah, we're all thinking about that, but then when we realized, wait a minute, she is pregnant. By the end, he's like, it could be either one. It could be a whole bunch of things that he's congratulating him for right there.
Right.
But all we know is like, at that moment, and also, if she already is pregnant, if she got pregnant, like. In Batman v Superman, in the bathtub sequence, for example, because that is like the when it would happen. Then the case could be made like when she runs up to stop the fight. It could be one of the things that makes him stop and listen to her is Clark can hear heartbeats.
He hears a heartbeat.
Oh, yes. And it's, and again, like, it's a beautiful thing. Like, and again, she doesn't talk that much, but she has a lot of scenes. And, but I really do love, like, someone, there's a reviewer that actually said, I was not sold on this version of Clark and Lois until I saw this movie. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, interesting, because I was always weirded out by how there were these people that apparently didn't like this Lois. They were like, oh, they have zero chemistry. I was like, well, what's your definition of chemistry? They're great together. But then they saw this, is like, this is good. I like it. It's like, well, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, I like them both. I like them both in their roles. You know, and it's not, to be fair to the critics, it's not the kind of chemistry that we're used to seeing in your typical movie these days. I'll give you that. It's a little bit, it's more subdued, but I don't think that's bad. I think that's actually good. I think that's a feature, not a bug. And yeah, I mean, well, Amy Adams, I think she does I think she's a very good Lois Lane. I think she seems to actually enjoy the role. And Henry Cavill, he likes being Superman.
Yeah, he loves it.
He seems like he's actually genuinely, like, I would actually like hanging out with him.
Yeah.
I think I would actually enjoy sitting back and watching a movie with him or something, or playing some sort of game with it. Yeah, I know. Yeah. He built that was that whole thing where he built the gaming PC. I actually enjoy this dude. But anyways, back to the movie. There was a lot to genuinely like about it. Of course, you know, Gal Gadot is still awesome as Wonder Woman. Yes. And we definitely got a little bit more there, which I enjoyed. Most of the more in this movie was worth having.
Yes.
Most of it did genuinely enhance things. Like I said, there was a couple cyborg scenes that would probably cut still. Mm-hmm. There's definitely one Aquaman scene that would absolutely cut. I would totally cut that whole sequence where he rescues the fisherman dude.
Yeah.
Because there was just no point to that being there at all.
You know, the funny thing is,
there was no need for it whatsoever.
You know, the funny thing is, it is purely kind of sort of an intro scene for him, like how much of a hero he is. Mm-hmm. It's his hero sequence, Cyborg has his hero sequence when he's piecing together what his powers are. Barry had, like, Flash has his hero sequence when he saves Iris from the crash. And that's his hero sequence, presumably. But yeah, I could see, like, it doesn't really, there's no connection to the plot in and of itself. Now, it's funny how Joss Whedon tried to give it a plot connection with the green blood all over the guy for some reason. Mm-hmm. But
not so much, but it's one of those things that just didn't really need to be there, especially since we already had an intro to Aquaman.
Yeah, we did. By the way, speaking of more from Gal Gadot and Ben Affleck, there's some nice little teases of Wonder Bat, isn't there? Yeah. Like where they're sitting down and their hands brush against each other and they're just looking like, whoa, okay.
And I thought that was there a little bit. There was definitely that there in Justice League as well.
Yeah.
But I think it was... I liked it more in this, and also, I don't know. I'd be curious to see if they ever develop it farther.
Yeah.
Just because it's something that is hinted at here and there. It was definitely a thing that Bruce Timm wanted to see happen.
Yep.
Back in that version of the DC animated universe.
Oh,
and
yes.
It got played with in the comics here and there, but it never really happens.
Yeah. And of course, like Ben Affleck, like, the way he plays Bruce and Batman, he is taking a good amount from Kevin Conroy, like how he has like the higher pitched voice when he's in public as Bruce. Mm-hmm. And then like the lower, deeper voice when he's talking with Clark and with Alfred and so on. Mm-hmm. And then of course his Batman voice, but there's that. So he's taking from that and like his interactions with Diana ever since Batman v Superman, like taking her arm and all that. Uh-huh, it's like, Zach is taking a good amount from Bruce Timm.
It's a good place to take things from.
Yeah.
Generally speaking.
It is the best. Yeah. And like the whole thing with like most of the comics have Aquaman is like having like shortcut shortcut blonde hair and all right. that, being clean cut and all that. But the Bruce Timm, like the series had him with long hair and a beard and a big beard.
Well, and this is it's obviously the 90s yeah. version yeah, of exactly. of Aquaman when they were kind of going through a period yeah. of rebooting everything.
Yeah, it's the post crisis. Yeah, because like the characters, like basically the Snyderverse and the DCU is basically the post crisis era versions of all the characters, but with some New 52 stories.
Yeah.
And that is the best way to do it. Cause like I can like the New 52 stories. I just don't like how the characters are characterized. Like pairing up Clark and Diana is no.
Well, it's an obvious sort of thing to do.
Yeah.
But it's also interesting. They didn't do that for long.
Yeah.
It didn't last. Although, I mean, there's plenty of Elseworlds stories too, most notably Kingdom Come, where that is where it ultimately goes.
Yeah. But the thing is, I will say that while I do get a little irritated at how much they do it, at least with Kingdom Come and those Elseworlds stories, they make clear that the only reason they're together is because his true love Lois is dead yeah. and Diana is the next best thing, the number two.
Yeah, which is fair, yeah. You know, but it is. And, you know, Clark and Lois have to be together, kind of like,
yeah.
you know, Peter Parker and Mary Jane. I'm sorry, they just have to be together. That's just the way it yes. is, you know. Yeah. But in any case, yeah. I think at the
Oliver,
end.
The, yeah, Oliver yeah. Queen, yeah, yeah, Green Arrow and Dino Black Land. Canary.
Yep.
Not this Felicity, whoever she is.
Felicity Smoke, yes. You know, to be fair.
Yeah,
I like that character. That was definitely the preferable relationship, the way they frame things in that show.
Yeah.
However, comma, yeah, I'm with you. That is let's face it. That was never Green Arrow. That was Batman with a different costume.
Yes, exactly.
You know, no disrespect to anybody in the show, actually. Y'all did what you were supposed to do, and you did a good, for the most part, did a good job doing what you were supposed to do. It's just yeah. what you were supposed to do that we're taking issue with.
Yeah.
But in any case, so at the end of the day, Snyder Cut is well worth it. I am not sad that I paid $15 to HBO Max so that I could watch it. And don't worry, I'm making sure for the next, you know, rest of that 30 days, I'm getting as much value out of that service as I possibly can. I don't intend to keep it as a thing.
All the Bruce Timm stuff, nearly all, I know. All the Bruce Timm stuff is on HBO Max. Yeah, dog.
Oh, I know. I could honestly, I could keep a subscription for a year and just binge all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I have some of it. I have some of it on DVD actually. So yeah. I have binged a lot of it. And at different times when it showed up on Netflix, when I still had that and whatnot, or when I had a DC Unlimited subscription for a while there.
Yeah.
Although I binged the heck out of it.
Yeah. I will say like the moment, like it would be a glorious cash cow. Like just bring back Swamp Thing and put it on HBO Max. Seriously. It's not the hardest thing to do. Everyone wants you to do it.
Yeah, that's right. They're bringing it. Did they already bring it back on CW? Because I know there's been talk.
What they did was they just showing the first season on CW, but it's heavily
seen how edited. It goes.
But it's edited, so it's like a PG-13 version, not the full-on version.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, honestly, putting it on HBO Max would be a much, much better thing. And I actually, enjoyed that series on DC Unlimited. I thought that was actually pretty good. Doom Patrol is weird. But anyway, although actually, you know, real quick, and then there's one other thing I want to ask you about.
Yeah.
On Doom Patrol, I actually thought Brendan Fraser really brought it in that series. I was like, holy crap, the dude can still act.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah. And I found it interesting that that Timothy Dalton, one of the James Bonds, was in that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I'm a huge Timothy Dalton fan. Actually, yeah. It's like anytime I see him in a movie, I'm happy.
And of course, who was the James Bond after Timothy Dalton?
That was Pierce Brosnan.
And
I hate Pierce Brosnan.
Well,
I hated his James Bond, which surprised the crap out of me because I really thought he would be a perfect James Bond.
Well, it's funny because, but
But the thing is, they just announced for a Black Adam that Pierce Brosnan is going to be Dr. Fate.
Yes. I think that is very interesting casting. I'm curious to see how that plays out now. And that actually leads wonderfully into the last thing that I wanted to wrap up with. So now, as I understand, the movement is no longer release a Snyder cut. It's restore the Snyder verse.
Yes, it is. Now, here's the thing. People, like some people, like even Ann Sarnoff, like, and I'm so disappointed in Ann Sarnoff because she showed up as the new head of Warner Brothers and there was so much potential there. Like, again, she helped create HBO Max. So it's like, and there was so much potential in there that she replaced like the meddler, Kevin Sugihara. And there was, and she was brought in by J.J. Abrams, who was tired of getting meddled over at Lucasfilm. And what happened? Well, Jim Lee was talking about, we're going to do a multiverse, which means we're going to do like movies that different fans from different sides want. Mm-hmm. Like we may even have like the Batman Beyond, the Batman Beyond movie we always wanted with Michael Keaton. We could have that. We might have that because he's planning on showing up in the Flash film. He might happen. But what happens? She does this article where she's saying, yeah, we may be doing a multiverse, but there are no plans to continue the Snyderverse. I mean, we gave him his trilogy and whatever. And it's like, what about the air cut of Suicide Squad? No, we're not planning on doing that. Now, people have pointed out, now here's the thing. HBO Max is not Ann Sarnoff's jurisdiction. It's Jason Kilar's. So it's up to him. And okay. Jason Kilar has been more openly in favor of, like, he's been openly helping out the hype of Snyder Cut. So there's the implication that he's more on Zack Snyder's side, but that's the aside. But the thing is, again, you've been talking about a multiverse. Okay, give us a multiverse. And that means continue Zack's vision on HBO Max. That won't interfere with whatever the heck you're doing, planning on releasing in theaters. Just do it. Yeah, there's no problem. Just do it.
I completely agree. I so much want to see more of this. I mean, for one, say what you will, mm-hmm. Zack Snyder, at least he has a coherent vision of what he's wanted to do.
Yeah.
With the whole thing. And I would say, I honestly say, do it. Let him finish his vision for the DCEU. And then, because his vision includes a reboot,
mm-hmm.
his vision actually has a reboot built into the end of it.
Yes.
Just do that. And then afterwards, do whatever stupid crap you want.
Exactly. And if you were to continue this whole thing, baby Bruce Kent, the son, is the son of Clark and Lois, but he takes the mantle of the new Batman. You could have a cool little take on Batman Beyond right there. Have like a half Kryptonian Batman. That's pretty. That would be pretty fun. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, and yes, I don't really care if they want to do like kind of ape the DCAU and just do a bunch of like separate, kind of standalone but somewhat connected movies.
Yeah,
I'm okay with it. Do stuff like that. It's fine. You don't have to, especially frankly in the COVID era, who knows whether or not movie theaters are going to be allowed to continue to exist anyway. Doing these smaller things on the streaming services is probably going to be the way of the future regardless.
Exactly.
Whether you like it or not, I love the blockbusters. I love going to the movie theater. I love the whole experience, but unfortunately, I don't think it doesn't seem to me that they're letting that happen.
Yeah. By the way, you mentioned the shape of the size of the screen before.
The 4:3 aspect. That's not a thing that, like I said, that's not a thing that actually bothered me.
It's not about it. Look, the thing about it is, here's something for you, Dar. The thing about it is, it's a full film cell. Like when he was filming and recording it, that was the full cell. Like oftentimes, like with movies, they will then cut it down and then have it like with the maxed out widescreen. So it's a full cell, and it is the perfect shape for an IMAX screen. And that was what Zach was planning. It's like, okay, first, it's the full cell, so it is essentially the full vision. What you're, right. Everything that I filmed in this shot is you're going to see. And if we ever do release it in theaters, when you sit down in an IMAX thing, you will see the whole darn thing. Like, that was his plan there. But there's that. Oh, by the way, one last thing.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the last Nightmare Vision? Like, that was the sequence that Zach shot last year. The thing with Joker and with Deathstroke being on Bruce's side. It is interesting.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons. Especially, it was especially interesting in the sense that they cut his whole, they mentioned it, but they cut the whole thing where he has the vision where Flash is coming back in time to warn him. They mentioned that, but they cut it. And so I was like, I'll be honest, for the purposes of the movie, I didn't really see the point of it.
Yeah. I mean,
Again, I think that's a sequence that I would honestly cut to get it down to 3 hours for a theatrical release.
Yeah. And honestly, I feel like that, I would say that, like, everything after Clark does the classic shirt rip, like, and then it smashes to black.
Yeah.
It really feels like under normal circumstances, like in a Marvel movie circumstances, that would be where you start to get the end credits. And then you get the whole sequence with Luther and Deathstroke as the mid-credit scene. And then the end credit scene would be everything after that, like the Nightmare Vision, and then he's talking with Martian Manhunter. But again, yeah, those are things that sequence, number one, he actually said, I filmed it, like Zach actually said, the reason he filmed it for this movie, as opposed to his, it was because he isn't 100% sure that they were absolutely going to green light Justice League 2 and so on. Mm-hmm. So he said, I wanted to do a scene with Batman and Joker, because he's like, it's been unfortunate. Like, even in Suicide Squad, there hasn't been a scene in this universe so far of Batman and Joker interacting. So I kind of wanted to do that. And it is a tease for what's to come with Justice League 2. So that's that. But yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that it is best for the extended cut, not the theatrical cut necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was interesting as far as Deathstroke being there. It makes sense in context.
Yeah.
It also makes sense. I could even argue that it makes sense with the Joker being there in context.
Yeah.
In a certain sense, because, you know, Joker doesn't want Darkseid to finish destroying the planet because, you know, it ruins his jokes.
Yeah. No jokes.
But I didn't see the point. It was devoid of context.
Yeah.
Other than it's like, okay, we know Superman's gonna, we know they're talking about Superman the whole time. We already know that.
Yeah.
And you're kind of left wondering. It's okay. Why? What gets him there? Obviously, you know, we know in the broader context, because we're fans who know things, that it's because Lois was in fact pregnant and she dies, and that drives him a little bonkers. And there's been different Elseworld stories that have used that exact plot device to drive Superman over the edge.
Yeah, and even like in a Batman v Superman, like the first Nightmare Vision ends with him saying, "She was my world, and you took her from me," and then we see Flash showing up and screaming at Bruce, it's Lois is the key. And it's like, so it's like, it is in the grander context, it kind of, it does make sense as like that Bruce is constantly having these visions of the future that he has to avoid. But yeah, in and of itself, it would be best to like wait for that until the extended edition, and then the theatrical cut wouldn't have it necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, I don't even know why I would put it in the extended edition, just because I'm like, why?
Yeah.
I don't understand. If I was going to do a vision, Bruce having some sort of vision, which I don't know why Bruce would have a vision in the first place. That's another question. I'm like, why though?
Might be a revelation.
It's like that's not what he does. The only way that would have made sense as if instead of Martian Manhunter floating outside his balcony, it was Dr. Fate.
You know, that's very interesting. Yeah, because Fate is all about, like, he's like Mr. Mental. Now, Martian Manhunter does have mental abilities, but it's not like he can see into the future. Dr. Fate can. So there you go.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
Exactly. That would have been a better, that would have made it a little bit better tease. Although still your average person has no idea who Dr. Fate is, so it wouldn't have helped them at all.
Well, if it was Pierce Brosnan.
Well, I mean, people
Yeah.
would have gone, oh, hey, that's Pierce Brosnan. Oh,
Hello.
actually, you still wouldn't know it's Pierce Brosnan because if they did it right, he'd have his helmet on.
Yeah, he has his helmet on, but still. Yeah,
Which,
by
you know what,
the
honestly, that's it. That, you know what, now I don't like the casting of Pierce Brosnan as Dr. Fate because he's gonna want that helmet off the all the freaking time.
Well, I mean, like, even like in the comics, like, he has the helmet off when he's not in Dr. Fate mode, but he puts it on as like, whenever I need to show up, okay, I've got the helmet on, now let's go full power. But it's like, but it's less of a, but it's, but that's less so. That was more so at the beginning of post-crisis. And like, as the years went on, like, he was out of the suit less and less. So, yeah.
But anyway, those few things,
Yeah.
it was yeah.
Know what the funny thing is? Zach's original idea for that scene at the very end. It wasn't necessarily supposed to be Martian Manhunter. It was supposed to be Jon Stewart. And it was supposed to be like that. The idea was that even though the movie would have this set crew of, like Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Cyborg and Flash, that he would be introducing the other key members of the Justice League with the idea that yes, they're going to be major characters later on. And he so therefore he was introducing Martian Manhunter. And then he was going to introduce Jon Stewart. He's going to introduce, okay, here's the Green Lantern for the crew. But what happened was way back, well, and even like as late as like when he was trying to do it, like the additional shooting, they for all their talk about a multiverse, Warner Brothers was saying, hey, we have a Green Lantern stuff and series and movies coming, and we want to like focus on that. So can you not introduce Green Lantern for your thing and let us introduce him on ours?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was like, all right, well, look.
Yeah.
Well, so I still want to use this. And he's like, well, I already introduced Martian Manhunter. Might as well bring him on and continue it.
I guess. And you
Yeah.
know, I was gonna say, if I were to give Bruce a vision, it would probably just be more like Darkseid coming back.
Yeah,
So,
probably.
you know, something like that, as a opposed to everyone can look forward to evil Superman, which again, it's one of those things, it's too soon to even go an evil Superman route. It's like you've got to have another movie or two to get used to having good guy Superman before you can totally flip it into an evil Superman, because we got you know, Man of Steel. And then we got Batman versus Superman, which is mostly a Batman movie. And then we got a little bit of him in Justice League, but we haven't really gotten comfortable with a fully developed Superman yet for an evil Superman to have the impact that it should.
Yeah, I mean, like from what we've know about Justice League 2, like Zack Snyder has actually said that Justice League 2 is for the most part going to be a continuation of what's going on in the Nightmare storyline. They're trying to figure out how to, go back in time and make sure that this never happened. So with that in mind, I could have easily seen, again, if Justice League One, the true Justice League One had come out in 2017, we could have gotten a Man of Steel 2 in the meantime, like in the interim, but like in 2018 or whatever. And then boom, we would have gotten a someone else may have directed that one, and then we get Justice League 2. It was like, okay, we've got a full movie right there. Yeah. Ideally beginning with the wedding. Clark Lewis wedding. Although it's almost a given that the Clark Lewis wedding is pretty much going to be at the beginning of Justice League 2, assuming, but it's like, but most it's, but it's like a framing story. Okay, this is what's going on in the present day. Oh, and by the way, but in this alternate future where they're trying to prevent this future from happening, this is the main thing.
The one other thing I want to say about if they do go with Snyder Cut, And I know it's got the reboot thing built right into it, which on one hand is good because it lets DC do whatever they want. They can recast characters and everything, which I think in and of itself, especially since it's been so long, these actors only got so many years that they can keep playing these characters anyway. They're going to need to do that. But the downside is I am getting really, really tired of DC using Flash does time travel to reboot the universe.
Yeah.
I am so sick of seeing in comics, in the animated universe. And now, I mean, we kind of just saw a mini version of it actually in Snyder Cut. It's like, can we stop with Flash does time travel?
Although, like, and the funny thing is, the more we have learned about what he himself has planned, the more he's given us the idea that while he had set up for Flashpoint with casting Jeffrey Dean Morgan as Thomas Wayne, and he would be the perfect Flashpoint Batman.
Oh, obviously, yes. Yeah. It would be great.
He says, even then, I wasn't necessarily saying that I would be the one directing Flashpoint, but it's like, but he was setting it up so that someone could do it after Justice League 3. So there is a thing going for that, but even then,
that said, I think the whole idea of rebooting it with a Flashpoint thing is, in this context, it's a good idea. I'm just tired of the trope. It's kind of like, for a while there, I was really tired of the whole trope where, you know, somebody shows up with kryptonite and almost takes down Superman, but then he rallies the strength and manages to get through. And it's like, can I stop seeing that same sequence over and over?
Yeah.
I mean honestly, it's a good sequence, but does everyone have to use it?
Yeah. And you get the idea, but that what happens in Kingdom Come, where he's like, where Supes is like, after all of these years, I have developed an immunity to this freaking kryptonite. I'm done with it. And we're like, thank you.
Honestly, yeah. That actually would be a cool sequence.
Yeah. Well, there's that. Now.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a whole lot of other things where it's like, this is a generic critique I would make of DC as a whole, is they've really got to stop with the reboots, because in all of their formats, because they keep just retelling the same overarching story, is, you know, and it always goes to Darkseid, and it always goes to, you know, destruction of planet, and then there's time travel, and it's like, can we stop? Stop. And pick a version of your characters that you're going to run with for a solid 10 to 20 years, and just do it. Instead of rebooting everything. No wonder nobody wants to buy your crap anymore, because nobody wants to get involved in a story that is just going to disappear in 2 years.
No more stakes at all. Yeah. And I'll say this, like, okay, Jason Gilar, first, please green light the rest of Zack's vision. And two, just green light filming Just like 2 and 3 back to back, release it as a mini series on HBO Max.
Make it happen quickly. All right. We can get through this annoying, but I do think somewhat necessary reboot thing for this. And then do this and use the time between now and then to do this thing. It's called coming up with a freaking plan. Get everybody on the same damn page.
Yes.
You know, like, you know, whether you love them or whether you're meh, at least Kevin Feige has had that.
Yes.
For Marvel. He has had a plan that, yes, has had to get moved around and shuffled around to a bit, but there's always been an outline. There's always been a rough plan that that is still loose enough to be able to adjust it on the fly, which you need. And, you know, right now, Warner Brothers with the DCEU looks like freaking Disney with Star Wars. There is no plan. There's warring camps. Nobody knows what's going on. Yeah. I mean, depending on what you feel about what's coming down the pipe, it depends on which rumor you heard last week.
Heck, they're Marvel. Marvel doesn't look much better now. It's like Feige's plan was the Infinity Stones, the Infinity Gauntlet, the Infinity War. Mm-hmm. And now that that's all done, now what?
And, you know, I don't know. There hasn't been enough time yet to see whether or not there is a plan for the next stage. To be fair, you know, dealing with all the movie theaters getting shut down and everything, that has grossly affected Disney's plans in terms of at least how they go about releasing things. Yeah. I think, I do honestly think, and this is based on, you know, 10 years of movies from Kevin Feige.
Yeah.
I think he probably does have a plan. I think there just hasn't been time to see it yet. We were supposed to have seen much, much more by now.
Yeah. And hopefully, look, the fact that Disney now owns Fox, they now have X-Men and Fantastic Four.
Yep. Which, honestly, I think that also might have thrown a monkey wrench into Feige's plans. Because while I think Feige wanted that to happen, I don't know whether or not he planned for that to happen.
Yeah, not yet. It's like, okay. I mean, like, because, like, Phase 4, because 4, it would be ideal to maybe it would be fun to now introduce the Fantastic Four in Phase 4. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, yeah, because, like, and building on that, I guess, like, the idea is, like, look, with all the expectations, now that they own Fox, now that they have access to X-Men and Fantastic Four, the expectations are, okay, Feige, bring him in. But is that his plan? Does he have a plan?
We don't know.
I mean, like, there's an implication right now with Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, and with some hints with WandaVision that the Vision is, and with idea, like, with little teases about what's going to happen with Spider-Man 3, that the idea is that Phase 4 is primarily about a multiverse happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah, who knows? Yeah.
Very cool. Well, all right. Well, hey, on that note, let's reiterate, everybody, whether you're Marvel, whether you're Star Wars, whether you're DC, especially you guys, have a plan. Please, please have a plan. And please don't go all woke on us. Please. Yeah. Please. I know it's too late, maybe, for Star Wars. But anyway.
Ta-Nehisi Coates writing a Superman script. No, not
okay, Ta-Nehisi Coates. All right. We're going to stop right there. We're going to stop right there because I go for another half hour complaining about that. And I'm not going to. All right. Well, hey, thanks everybody for tuning in. Quick announcement. Ooh. I am going to be, well, not like a interesting announcement. More, I'm not going to be doing the regular Saturday show. And I know this is on Sunday, but availabilities are a thing. I'm not going to be doing the regular Saturday show for a little while because next week is Easter and I'm going to be going to the Vigil Mass. So I won't be here for one. And two, the weekend after that, I'm going out of state to work for a while. So I will probably not be available at all. So I'll probably still do a few solo shows here and there as I have time. But it's going to be as I have time.
Yeah.
So, and regular stuff will resume sometime in May when I am back in my regular domicile. So, until then, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for tuning in. And do stay tuned. There will be other, like I said, there will be things coming out in the meantime. Yeah. And until I see you on the regular schedule in May, keep fighting.